and welcome to another episode of Basketball. I'm Sean Woodley.
I'm Katie Heindel.
And today's show is brought to you by Rasheed Wallace, who once again, Katie, is getting sewered in the SEO department by the fact that he is a Lakers employee. I have gone through 6 pages of Google searches for Rasheed Wallace June 22nd, and nothing has come up except for stuff about him being an assistant coach on Darvin Ham's staff. It's very frustrating, Katie. There is one thing I found from today, where he was the one of the topics of an article, entitled on NBCSports.com, out of the Bay Area site, the 7 most ridiculous things NBA legends said about the Warriors, because why win a title if you can't then also get angry about what people have said about you in the past? So the quote from 2017 that Rasheed Wallace had about the Warriors is, quote, "Oh, we'd run through them, not even close. We play defense." Katie, what say you? Do you think this, is, of course, took place during the 16-17 Warriors, who had Kevin Durant on the team and won the title very easily? Do you think the 2003-04 Pistons would have been able to beat the super team that was the 2016-17 Golden State Warriors? Is Sheed correct here?
Yeah, I think he's correct. I do. I really do. Obviously, completely different styles of basketball, you know, completely different skill sets on display. But I just think of like the tenacity, the toughness. Trying to think of another T word, the teamwork of that Pistons team. And, you know, the Warriors team was a pretty strong team too, obviously. But I'm incredibly biased, and yeah, I think they could do it.
In fairness to the argument of this article that Rasheed Wallace was in fact wrong, that Warriors team was the second best defense in the league, in addition to being the number one offense in the league, because they had Kevin freaking Durant on the damn team. They were 67-15. Look, I am biased as well. I might take that Warriors team to beat the Pistons in a tidy 6 or 7 games, but I also can't begrudge Rasheed Wallace or anyone really for getting angry at that goddamn Warriors team, because it was just unfair. I didn't realize or remember this. They went 16-1 in the playoffs that year. Their only loss came in the finals in one game against the Cavs. That is bananas, Katie. I think this might be the time Rasheed's wrong. I feel very badly. I should also note there was another search that came up on this the sixth page of Rasheed Wallace June 22nd. This happened on June the 7th, which I think was just before he was brought on to be an assistant coach with the LA Lakers. It was, quote, "Bron would not have been successful in the 80s and 90s. I did not know Sheed was kind of one of these curmudgeon types about new age basketball. I thought he was a little bit more of a friend to today's basketball players. But do you think this is going to cause any discord in the Lakers locker room, Katie?
No, I don't think so. I mean, don't they expect, like, every generation of NBA player will have, like, their own, I don't know if it's curmudgeonly, but it's like, it's all framed within their experience and their perspective. Also, I think that's going to make him a more valuable coach, because you don't want someone who's just going to come in and be like, you want someone who's going to come in and be a little bit hard-nosed, you know, and be like, you guys are soft babies who've had it really easy.
You don't want him to be bowing to the altar of the very various basketball players on his team. I think that is probably good energy, especially going into what the Lakers situation is and has been in recent seasons. Katie, we have a big show today. We're going to get into our end of season thoughts. Of course, since we last spoke, the Golden State Warriors have won the NBA championship, which as a Boston Celtics hater myself, makes me very happy. They had a parade. There's been a lot of Steph crowning talk. There's been a lot of Steph about, you know, oh, is he a top 10 player in the NBA's history now, and all that good stuff that always comes with any sort of legacy building championship. We've had drunk Draymond Green, which we also love to see, at a grand annual tradition that's nice to have back in our lives. And of course, Andrew Wiggins becoming an absolute hero and an apple of the eye of Golden State Warriors fans everywhere. So we're going to sort of wrap our thoughts on the season, the finals, the playoffs, and just kind of think the season as a whole, sort of maybe bigger trends, bigger thoughts we have about it as it comes to a finish, the first full NBA season we've seen in a few years. And then we're also going to bring back an old favorite for the segment we're trying out this week, Katie. It is, of course, Smileytics, where the draft is tomorrow, and the only way to determine whether or not players are going to be good players or not is to judge them by the quality of their smile, of course, inspired by the greatest Google search that there is in the entire world, which is, of course, Rasheed Wallace smile. It is the sort of testing ground for this theory. It holds up. Rasheed Wallace was very good on account of his smile and nothing else, surely. So we're going to do that and go through the top, I don't know, 10 or so picks in this year's draft as they are projected and talk about their smiles and whether or not they portend NBA success. But Katie, before we do that, we should probably pass along a little bit of news to our lovely listeners out there. It's kind of sad, very sad, bittersweet. This is going to be the second last episode of basketball. Next week will be our finale. And what we're going to do for that show is we're going to do just a big Ask Us Anything mailbag. Anyone is free to submit questions, and we will just spend the show answering them and digging into them and having some fun. But we've kind of been chatting, and I think I've realized that, you know, we've got a lot of stuff on the go. We have a lot of other interests and projects we're kind of throwing our attention into at the moment. And there's just probably not the bandwidth on either of our ends to continue the podcast through another offseason and into a new basketball season, which is sad for sure, because Katie, this has been an absolute delight of a show to record with you every week. Any words of explanation about the decision here, other than what I have said here to the listeners out there who are surely right in the midst of falling into deep states of tears and emotion?
Yeah, get it together, everybody. No, I think we did a really good job. I just want to say, like, considering the fact that we started this podcast when there was no basketball. Like, we got the idea for this, a few months before the pandemic, and we were pretty gung-ho, and we're like, this would be so funny. We're going to go be able to use the great and beautiful studio. And then the pandemic happened, and we were like, well, should we even continue? And then, you know, what the show is about is kind of talking around basketball anyway. So we did, but, you know, for the first long stretch of recording it, things were pretty grim. But I'll say, like, it was always a bright spot in, like, a pretty bad time. I'm sure sometimes it helped me keep track of what week and, like, honestly, day it was. And then as basketball came back and things normalized, it got to morph and grow into something different. And I think that, given all the work that us and, you know, the whole team has put into it, I feel like what it feels like is a natural place to kind of to stop things.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, we're not doing it mid-season or anything like that. We wanted to sort of ride it out through the end of the year for sure. But yeah, I think just with everything else going on, the return of normal life as well, which we kind of didn't realize. Oh yeah, let's get back to normal. Oh yeah, normal was stressful and overwhelming. That's right. I do think it is, you know, a pretty, you know, good endpoint overall. And I do think as well that without this podcast, I know the last couple of years of my life would have certainly been a lot less fun and interesting and creatively charged because I didn't really have that many outlets going on. And this was a really, really great outlet to, A, talk to one of the most brilliant people I know in all of covering basketball every week and have an excuse to have you punch down and hang out with me. And also just a fun way to kind of broaden the way that I think about basketball in the NBA. I think talking to you every week will have that effect. And I think, you know, we've done our due mission here, and the spirit of UB shall carry forth through all the other stuff that we do for sure. But yeah, just want to thank everyone who's been a listener, a Patreon subscriber in particular. If you have been on the Patreon, you know, throughout, you are just an absolute wonderful person and we love you. And, you know, we'll still be around, obviously, doing other stuff and doing other podcasts and basketball feelings and Locked On Raptors and all that good stuff. But yes, this will be the second to last episode, the penultimate episode, if you will, of basketball. And so I guess without further ado, we should dive on in, shall we, Katie, and talk about the end of the season. We'll get weepy and all that stuff, and then we'll talk about the draft through the beauty of smiles before we give way to next week's finale episode, which, again, will be a mailbag episode. You are all free to send in any questions. Nothing's off limits unless it's off limits, and then we won't answer it. But ask us anything. Go nuts, and we will work it into next week's mailbag finale of Up. With that, let's get to the finale of the NBA season, the Golden State Warriors winning the title, and our grand summation of the year that was in the NBA. That's all coming up in just 1 second. Okay, we've reached the thing we're talking about this week, Katie, and that thing, quite plainly, is the season that was. It's over now, Katie. It's all done. The NBA season for 2021-22 is in the books. The Golden State Warriors are the NBA champions once again, fourth time in 8 years. It's lovely for them. There were ups, there were downs. There was a whole part of the season where it seemed like the whole league was going to get derailed by COVID in like December and January, and they kept on trudging through, as we all do in these hell times. But we've now reached the conclusion, Katie. I guess sort of let's start broad. Do you have like a big grand takeaway from the season? It can be about the Warriors in the finals. It can be about the whole thing at large. Sort of things you're going to be left thinking about from the 2021-22 NBA season now that it is behind us.
I'd say it started a lot more. It felt more exciting to start than to end. And I don't think that, I want to clarify, that's not just like my own, where my own energy levels were. I honestly think at the beginning of the season, it felt like, you know, given what had happened in last year's finals, it felt like it could be, you know, again, like anyone's season. Obviously, I thought the Suns were going to come back and win everything. But even within that, there's like all these other teams, like when the Bulls were really up, then when the Grizzlies kind of came back, and just like the amount of excitement and sort of jostling, watching the Lakers drive off a cliff was sort of exciting, because for a lot of the time it was this feeling of like, is this really happening? Yes, it is really happening. And then in the end, I'd say it was almost like one of the most traditional feeling endings to an NBA season, given that you've got like, you know, this kind of legacy team in the Celtics. And then also this legacy team, like a historical legacy franchise in the Celtics. And then this like, you know, budding legacy team who've like cemented that in the Warriors. Like that felt very, aside from the first game, like that series wasn't super exciting. And
yeah.
But I also can kind of appreciate in that a return to normalcy perhaps in the NBA, given the last, like the upheaval of the last couple of seasons. I find the NBA has a knack for balancing itself out, you know, when things go one way too much. But I was a little bit bereft to kind of lose that excitement of like, it's anyone's season. It could be anyone's like season at the beginning of the season. And then that just sort of tapered off into like, oh no, it's these two teams' season.
Yeah, as soon as the Suns lost to the Mavericks, it felt like that Warriors-Celtics finals was preordained, especially considering like how hurt the Heat were. And hey, congrats to the Heat for taking it all the way to the distance in that series with Boston. But yeah, it did feel, honestly, it felt to me like from the very outset of the Eastern Conference playoffs, even like I think as soon as Chris Middleton went down in the first round, it was like, oh shit, Boston's going to win this, aren't they? And they did, because they were the best team over the course of the second half of the season and more or less played like the 96 Bulls during that time. It just felt pretty preordained. And yeah, we kind of got robbed of that Suns-Warriors duel that I think we were all kind of looking forward to throughout the entirety of the season. And that always puts a bit of a damper to me on like the late part of the postseason. If you kind of have that telegraphed matchup and then one team shits the bed on the way, it kind of leaves you wanting a little more, not dissimilar to what happened last year in the East with the Sixers blowing it against the Hawks and kind of robbing us of that first Sixers-Bucks duel in the postseason that has kind of been flirted with for a few years, but has never really come to fruition. So yeah, I think I'm with you in that it did feel almost rote and normal by the end. I do think, however, my big takeaway from the season at large is that I kind of think the whole parody thing is probably here to stay. And yes, the Warriors won this year, so that kind of cuts into my very own theory that parody is here to stay. But like, this was not a Warriors team that at the outset of the season was like an obvious declarative title favorite or anything like that. We saw the two Vegas favorites, not even, you know, in the Lakers case, not even make the playoffs. In the Nets case, not advance past the first round or get a single playoff victory in that first round. And it did feel for a very long stretch of the season like it was wide open, like there were four or five teams in the Eastern Conference who could come out of the conference, like there were, you know, three or four teams in the West that had a shot. The Grizzlies were kind of this surprise upstart. And when I look at what the league is going to look like going forward, I mean, sure, maybe the Clippers getting all their guys back, you know, kind of walk into next season as like the obvious favorites. But I think the overall quality of the teams in sort of the upper crust of the league, the top 10 to 12 teams, is as widespread and evenly spread as it's been in a very long time. And there's like a lot of individual sort of supernova type players who can throw their own teams into that mix just because of their own individual greatness, like a Luka Doncic, for example. And so I do think, like, I would bet against the Celtics and Warriors being in the finals next season. I would bet that it'll be a different set of teams there for what, like the fourth or fifth straight season, a new non-repeat finals, which we got so accustomed to in the Steph and LeBron decade where it was just those two all the time, no matter what. You know, I kind of think we might see a bit of a sort of evenly spread out. It's still going to be probably the same 10 to 12 different teams and characters you're watching, but that does feel like a wider field than we've had in recent NBA memory. And it kind of goes back, honestly, it feels a bit like the aughts to me, except with just more talented players in the league than there were back in 2004 and 5 when like different teams were winning every year. But it did still kind of feel like there was, you know, big holes in all these teams and a lot of sort of questions. It feels like a lot of teams now are building towards contention and not having a ton of holes in the way the game is going. I don't know, Katie, am I crazy to think that parity might be here to stay? Is that a silly sort of big takeaway to have from the year, considering the NBA is the league where parity has never really kind of, you know, had a stronghold?
No, I agree with that. I wouldn't say it's here to stay because nothing is here to stay in the NBA usually.
Damn.
Yeah. But I agree with you. I think that like these kind of dynastic teams, I don't know that the Warriors will get there. I think they could get there again. I don't know if they'll do it immediately. But then I also think if they're going to do it immediately, like if they're going to do it immediately, seems like the best case scenario for them, you know, is like that core group of Klay, Draymond and Steph age a little bit. So yeah, but that's like, that's what I meant. Like, that's what was so exciting to me about the beginning of this season is that it seems like you didn't know how it would end. And so I like that going forward, the idea of that. What I am sort of curious about next season, and we got a bit of a taste of this season, is this kind of changing of the guard in terms of the league's leaders. I guess superstars to a degree. But like, you know, a big bummer this season for me was John Wall just like being asked not to play basketball by the Rockets, like by a team that was like not good or, you know, pretty, like not even, I'd say like very intact. And they were still just like, nah, we don't need you. You're good to, you know, take a season off. So I like, that's an arc that I don't want to just see end. Same with obviously Russell Westbrook and what happens there. I'd say like same with the whole Lakers situation. Like it's interesting to me to see that team building as we once knew it in terms of like team building as set out by that team stars. We saw that with the Nets too, right? Like doesn't necessarily work anymore. You know, there's a different kind of like super team building. And then maybe even like super team building in terms of just superstar stacking does not necessarily work anymore with the way that, whether that's because of the way that like the game is being played or just kind of the approach to it by the younger generation or just like more generalized talent than like specialized talent. And I do think like that's a good thing because we've talked about this before, but it could make way for like smaller market franchises to really flourish and thrive and to become destinations in their own right. I hated that the Nets were just like capitulated in the end. Kyrie Irving. Because yeah. What was the whole point of holding out? And I think the Nets are kind of karmically due everything that's coming to them.
It's a good thing that's not going to carry over into next season, Katie. Not a chance.
Well, I was going to say, if Durant and Kyrie walk away from that, then you have Ben Simmons and the rest of your collection of dudes, and you kind of forfeited the great young team that you had developing there to get all those stars, and now you're left with a crater, essentially, where those superstars crashed. So that's kind of interesting to me. Similarly, Darvin Ham is going to have, I know I'm getting into next season, but his hands full with just turning that boat around. But that's something that I wonder. And we saw kind of the end of an era, perhaps, in this season in the NBA, at least until this generation of stars, I guess. Maybe they'll become superstars in the same degree, but I really don't see that happening. I'm trying to remember the other big beats of this season for me, which is obviously difficult when we have recency bias brains like we do.
Yeah. I mean, I can piggyback kind of on what you were going on there, the super team stuff, while you think of other big beats. I think it is hard to say how static this sort of, widespread, there's stars on every team. Everyone kind of has a guy they can claim can be their dude who leads them through, to a deep playoff run or whatever. Obviously at some point, the cap will spike again, I'm sure, and create the environment for super teams to be created again. But I do think it's getting more difficult to make it work, because I think teams are realizing that depth is important. And in the current climate, if you have three max dudes on your team, your depth is going to suck ass. And you're going to be very prone to injury or players who choose to not play because they don't want to get a vaccine or whatever it might be. Your margin for error is so much slimmer. And so, how often do we talk about how necessary luck is to win an NBA championship? It becomes even more of a priority if you are kind of riding that razor thin boundary between having three superstars who can probably carry you. But if it goes down to two, there's just too many other good teams out there who are going to exploit that. And so I just think the construction of super teams is extremely difficult, and it's probably something that won't be done through free agency. It'll more be done the way the Warriors have done it, where you have to draft your own guys and build a super team internally and then just pay out of the ass to keep it around. And so that could be something we see. Maybe the Grizzlies become that. Maybe the Raptors or the Cavs become that. And that would be great for the NBA if you had those internally grown super teams. I think it's kind of a different thing than just stars teaming up and joining in some sort of locale where they like where the weather and taxes are. So I think it's harder from that perspective. I also think we've talked about this a little bit. It seems like it's kind of uncool to go to these big market teams now. And kind of the cool thing to do with the new wave of stars is to just make it work with the team you get picked to. And I wonder if Giannis, the way sort of LeBron set up the decade of player empowerment and moving all over the place and teaming up in super teams, I kind of wonder if Giannis sticking in Milwaukee might be that sort of domino that leads to other stars just choosing to ride it out with their teams that they've been drafted to in a small market and just saying, if they're doing a good job building around me, I can have all the success in the world, all the fame in the world, all the endorsements and money in the world, and I don't have to move all my shit to go and pack up and go to a high stress market where things are going to be entirely seen through a microscope at all times. I do kind of wonder if the first takeification of the big market teams has actually kind of made it uncool to be on a super team in one of those big markets. That could just be a small short-term trend, but I kind of wonder if maybe we're in the very beginning of a longer-term thing where that's just not a thing superstars look to do as much as they look to just try to ride it out with their own side.
Yeah, and I think about something you and I have talked about too, when we talk about actually cool players in the league. And when you say what's cool and not cool to do, you do see those kinds of players that I think we both considered cool sticking with their smaller market teams or sticking with the teams that either drafted them or showed meaningful interest in getting them there and have supported them and understood the value in keeping them, but also developing them and listening to them in terms of how they think the team could be best built. A lot of these are teams with younger, you know, newer GMs, I'd say like much more diverse coaching staff. There's like teams that seem to really be embracing their difference in being a small market, but then thinking like, you know what, how can we set ourselves up at an advantage if we don't maybe have the market advantage of these like huge behemoth teams? How can we actually just like be a great place that people want to come and play basketball and just really like focus on ourselves? And I enjoy that because it is like, I don't know if this is like an oxymoron to call NBA basketball holistic in terms of its like gigantic capitalistic leanings, but those teams to me are kind of like this, they are the closest thing to a more holistic basketball model, which I like a lot.
Right. Let me ask you this one, Katie. I always think about this and sort of, you know, I like to go back and revisit seasons and think about, oh yeah, that was a really fun season. There's super memorable stuff in there. The playoffs were especially good. Where do you think 5-10 years from now, the 2021-22 season sort of slots in? Do you think it will stand out as particularly memorable? Do you think it'll stand out as kind of like a, oh yeah, that season happened, that was kind of the last year before things got actually normal again, still a lot of weird shit going on, still a lot of COVID, still a lot of, you know, sort of latent after effects of the weirdly compressed schedule over the course of the previous 2 years? You know, where do you think this one will sort of slot in the annals of history? Will it be a terribly memorable season, or will it be one that kind of gets forgotten to time?
Aside from Scottie Barnes getting Rookie of the Year, which I think will make this season memorable when we get farther into Scottie Barnes's career and like the incredible things I think he'll do. I know that sounds like a completely like insular take, but I don't even mean it like that. I just think that sometimes years like this one, which have obviously already started fading from your and my memories, are only marked by the most memorable players in them. And like Scottie Barnes, and that whole, I'd say like, you know, Mobley too, like this kind of draft class that came just before this season will be what makes it memorable and think people look back and think, oh yeah, what happened in that season? Oh yeah, the Warriors won against the Celtics in the finals. Like that will fade faster, I think, than remembering like, oh shit, yeah, like,
remember that's where all the rookies ripped everyone's throats rookies out.
When they started, yeah, and like where they're at now. Hopefully, that is my hope. Otherwise, no, I don't think it was that memorable a season.
Yeah, I do think if I do recall anything from it, it will be that I think this was the season that sort of dealt with all of the after effects of COVID and the, you know, everyone seemed so goddamn tired by the end, Katie. The quality of the basketball fucking sucked because everyone was exhausted. It totally makes sense that the quality of the basketball sucked, but it really seemed like dudes were just kind of barely hanging on. Jason Tatum obviously was hurt. The entire Heat team was busted in that series. It you know, that to me will be one of the sort of standing takeaways. And I really hope that everyone takes 3 full months off from hooping. Just everyone go take a long hyperbaric chamber nap to get ready for the following season. And I do think we'll probably see some lasting changes to the schedule eventually kind of be a result of this year too, where guys broke down so much. You know, I could totally see this being the impetus for a shortened regular season in lieu of some kind of midseason tournament that sort of decreases the number of games, adds a little bit of competitive juice to the middle of the season, which is always kind of a lacking thing. Do you buy that at all? Like that this is sort of the season where everyone broke down and this could kind of be the thing that changes some things going forward?
No.
No. You don't think the NBA will take all the signs and say, yes, let's change this for the better?
Like if operating on like the barest minimum during the pandemic and then also like seeing firsthand, because you also have to think like the NBA has seen more damaging and lasting effects of COVID on its players than has probably been disclosed, you know, to us. And that's the kind of stuff that's going to get disclosed in the years to come, or maybe when like guys, unfortunately, you know, touch wood, but maybe some have to like retire early and that's when we hear about these things. I don't know. But if that wasn't enough to kind of usher in like, maybe we should look at measures to kind of ease up. And then you had like the injuries on top of that. You had that kind of the ragged feeling of this season. And like, if you can't look at that from a bird's eye perspective and think of how one compounded the other and how this was sort of a train wreck waiting to happen. And, you know, it feels like a matter of time until there's just another train wreck down the road somewhere. Then no, I don't think this season in isolation will be enough for the NBA to think like, huh, could we change something? The only way I could see them being like, maybe we'll do an in-season tournament or something, is to recoup revenue. Like anything is just for money, right? So unless there's a way to tie adjustment in scheduling or something like that to a new monetization method, then no, I don't particularly see it changing. I don't know. Maybe the players union, you know, maybe they'll decide to collectively, you know, renegotiate their CBA or like they'll put pressure on the league. But I don't, like, we haven't felt that. Like, we haven't felt those things close to changing.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. Everything that the league has done in recent years suggests that they are driven only by money, which, fair enough, everything's driven by money, I guess. If you want to be party to it, and go fucking nuts. You're not special by being part of that. But it would be nice if they could sort of take a long, hard look and maybe sort of make an investment in the long-term health of the product. Not that I give a shit about ratings or like how much money the league is making or anything like that. Only as a, you know, I like when the players make a lot of money, that's great. So revenue is important for that reason. But I have a very little hope that this will actually inspire meaningful change. And if you're probably right in that if there is change, it's probably because it's more change in the pockets of the old owners, Katie. Let's try to end this on a bit of a positive note, shall we? What was your favorite thing about this season? What was your favorite overall storyline or player or individual moment that you're going to take away from the 2021-22 season, Katie?
Before they were ravaged by injuries, the Cavs, I think, they were probably my favorite thing.
They were pretty damn cool.
Just the way they, like, loved each other. Like, they love each other. And they're so excited to, like, be together. Though, my hope is that that carries over into next season, you know, when they come back healthy. But watching them kind of bud and grow, I think that was extremely cool. Probably the one good thing to come out of Houston was the Cowboy Let's Ride promo that they did on Bronx. What was it? Rodeo Night.
Yep. Rodeo Night in Houston. Shout out Armani Brooks.
Eric Gordon's wonderful acting debut. Though based on his talent alone, I'm surprised if this was his first production. I think we got the Welcome to Hell Domas sign during the trade deadline in Sacramento. That was glorious. Don't know what the Kings are doing. What else did I love? I loved, though now it has some, like, not trying to turn this negative, but now it has some undertones. But the weird dust up in Miami when PJ obviously picked up all the papers and had the clipboard. And I was like, okay, PJ's just like the voice of reason for this team. But now PJ is exercising his option to leave. So, but maybe also PJ just understands his value, an NBA champion.
Man wants to get paid.
Yes, the man does want to get paid. Saw Klay Thompson lean heavier into just like, soon to probably to be living on a boat full time. And I forgot about this one, but Stan Van Gundy flirting with the Church of Satan. That was pretty cool too. Oh, and Russ, of course, at the Met Gala. Great things.
Okay. Yeah, definitely the highlight of Russ's year. That's for damn sure. I would say for me, I think my favorite storyline to follow this year outside of the Raptors, which I think is kind of a, you know, the biased answer, and for good reason. They were fun as hell, and Scotty Barnes is the coolest player alive. But I think seeing the Wolves be normal, and in particular, obviously Anthony Edwards, we all love him, he's a fantastic player, but I do think seeing Karl Anthony Towns be an all-NBA player, kind of have himself a year where people kind of, oh well, he's actually a serious basketball player. Even though his sort of, I think the criticisms of him have always been a little bit, overwrought and kind of silly. it was really nice to see the Wolves kind of have their moment. And yeah, they had some weird ups and downs in that Grizzlies series, and they probably could have won that thing had they not fucked up so much. But it was really cool to see that franchise just look normal. The crowd of that in those games was fantastic, and Towns has been through so much shit. It's not like having a good basketball season overcomes all of the personal tragedy he's gone through or anything like that. I'm not suggesting that, but it was really nice to see him, you know, just kind of be happy playing basketball again. And that's a guy who's been through a lot. It was heartwarming to see him kind of reestablish himself in the league, make All-NBA and all that good stuff. So I think the Wolves for me are kind of the good feel-good story, even if Patrick Beverley constantly threatens to derail that at every turn. with that, Katie, let's pivot into the future of the NBA. More stars coming in as of tomorrow with the NBA draft. That means it's time for Smilelytics. The way that we determine whether or not NBA players will be good is through the quality of their smiles. We will do said determining in just 1 second in the segment we're trying out this week. The final segment we're trying out this week on Up. Okay, we've reached the segment we're trying out this week, and this week in the final segment we're trying out this week on the podcast, we are going with an old favorite, Katie, an absolute classic and probably the most predictive segment we do. It is, of course, Smilelytics, NBA Draft Smilelytics to be exact, where we go through the top 10 or so prospects in the draft order and determine whether or not their careers will be fruitful or not based on the quality of their smiles when we Google player name and smile. Again, inspired by Rasheed Wallace Smile, the one Google search that everybody should do every single day to start your day right. It's like basically having a healthy, balanced breakfast in the morning. Gets you off on the right foot. So, Katie, are you ready to go through the list of prospects in the 2022 NBA draft and determine now what their futures hold based on the quality of their pearly whites?
Yes, let's go.
Excellent. We begin with the projected first overall pick going to the Orlando Magic, Jabari Smith Jr. out of Auburn. I have searched Jabari Smith's smile. Katie, I have some strong opinions on this smile. This man has a gentle smile, I would say. It's very calming. It's soothing. It's a relaxed smile. To me, this is the kind of guy who's going to walk into a huddle the end of a close game. It's a 2-point game. It's the, you know, Eastern Conference Finals. It's the Magic taking on, I don't know, the Pacers in 2029. Who knows who will be good by then? I have no clue. And, you know, Jabari Smith's just walking in the huddle, very relaxed, very soothing, very calmly, just flashes that smile. Everyone kind of is at ease. They go in. There's no nerves in that final possession, and they go on and win the game just because Jabari Smith calmed the room with that smile of his. What am I at all in the same realm of opinion as you on Jabari Smith's smile here, Katie?
No, I think it's a really kind of thoughtful smile. He looks like, yeah. No, nothing. This is not to be negative. He looks like an older man. He just has the face of an older man.
He does, yeah. He looks like, he kind of looks like Tony Battee a little.
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's something in that that lends to him having like a very calming sort of like old soul. You know, that's why I think you find people like that calming, because you're like, oh, like you've maybe been through it. You've seen some stuff. But again, not to knock him. That's a great, great quality to have. Gravitas, you could say.
Yeah, nothing you can go wrong if you're the Orlando Magic taking Jabari Smith and that smile first overall. Let's go now to the projected second overall pick to my hated Oklahoma City Thunder. Not that I'm rooting for this pick to fail, but it could be kind of funny. the second projected pick is, of course, Chet Holmgren, the spindly stick boy out of Gonzaga, who is very tall and very good at defense. And when you search Chet Holmgren's smile, the third image that comes up suggests that maybe he's like a shithead YouTuber, or perhaps like a teen who's just kind of realizing that he can smile in photos, has always kind of been sarcastic, does the goofy face because he's never been comfortable in his own skin, but is maybe now realizing, coming through puberty into his adulthood, that, oh, he's actually aging pretty well and can perhaps start smiling just like a normal guy as opposed to being the class clown. Am I reading too much into the third image search for Chet Holmgren's smile, Katie? This one has a lot of red flags and troubling signs to me.
Maybe a little bit, yeah. I think he's just like a, I think he's just like an awkward guy. And I'm sure like his whole life he's been hearing how awkward he looks slash is. And like, that sucks. He's hearing it now in all like the draft write-ups I refuse to read because they basically talk about people as if they're objects. With a lot more like deficits and drawbacks, you know, it's a weird one-dimensional way to flatten people. Anyway, no, I think he is just kind of like he's got a little bit of a goofy smile. He can't help it. I don't think there's anything like that bodes like bad.
What do you think of his career holds here, Katie, based on this very cursory Google search?
I think it's good. I think he is going to a team. I know you hate OKC, but I feel like it's a good fit for someone who's maybe a bit unsure of themselves because you have two great like leaders who are very like authentic and I'd say sure of themselves in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, also Lu Dort, you know, just like this kind of quiet indoors case, like more quiet, kind of steadying presence. And obviously Shai is just very like extremely comfortable in his own skin. Mm-hmm. I think that's great.
Totally.
You've also got, what's his name? Giddy's there for a little while too. Him and Giddy are kind of funny. Holmgren and Giddy are like kind of funny at different ends of the spectrum, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know you were like not up on Giddy for his smile when we looked at him. Anyway, I think OKC is a really good fit for this guy.
I would also argue that there's an even more interesting juxtaposition in terms of appearance on that team, and it's Poku, who is kind of like bizarro Chet Holmgren, or inverse of one another, like very skinny, very frail looking, kind of looks like Chet Holmgren in a lot of ways. Like, it's a very tall, spindly, bit of a bony face structure. That's a fun combination. Watching those two guys out there, watching those two lead the Thunder to 19 wins again is going to be a lot of fun. Let's go next to the projected third overall pick to the Houston Rockets, Paolo Banchero, who, this is a kind of interesting one, of the first 16 different image searches that come up here for Paolo Banchero. I think he's only smiling in 1, 2, 3, 4 of them, maybe? And he's kind of sneering in a couple. He's not smiling in a few. There's not a lot of Paolo Banchero smile photos popping the top of this Google search, Katie. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, there's not. I mean, most of these are like in-game kind of actions. Yeah. His like headshot is like pretty awkward. But I would say the one where he is smiling, he's more like a, it feels just like a business smile.
Yeah. It's like, I know I need to do this for the headshot because that's, it goes on my resume, but like, what am I doing here? I'm beyond this stuff. And yeah, his in-game affectations are, they're all over the map. There's one where he kind of looks like he's smelling a fart. There's one where he just looks totally dead, like his arms are out. He's clutching his hands as though something good has happened, but you can't tell if it's good or bad. There's also one where he has the ball in his hands where he looks kind of surprised. Interesting one here, Katie. I seems a little too serious for me in order to, you know, have a, you know, star-filled NBA career. This might be a tough one for the Rockets. Sorry to Paolo Banchero, but you know, we'll revisit this in a year's time when maybe he has some NBA level smiles taken as shots. Of course, you never want to smile when you're playing for Duke, so I understand that too. Any other thoughts there before we move on to the next player?
No.
Okay, let's move on to the projected fourth pick right now, going to the Sacramento Kings, who seem hell-bent on trading this pick away. What the hell? I don't ever know what the Kings are doing. Let's go with Jaden Ivey, the Purdue point guard, who, I gotta say, Katie, very expressive smile, very genuine smile, it seems. He's got smiles on the court. He's got smiles and headshots. Seems just like a happy fella. I love the vibes emanating from Jaden Ivey's smile as a Google search, Katie.
Yeah, I also have to say I'm really biased because I recently interviewed his mom, Neil Ivey, who's the head coach of Notre Dame's women's team. And she's incredible. And hearing her talk about him off the record, but then just like I also watched some clips of him talking about his mom and the women's game and knowing that like he grew up watching that, it just really rounds him out for me. So like I've gone well beyond the Google image search. I like really think he is as he appears in terms of just being like a very, you know, well, like happy-go-lucky, super grounded, you know, like this is like a very comfortable in his own skin type of smile.
Yeah, I think for me, this is a smile worth going first overall. I don't say that lightly, but so far, he has clearly been the best smile we've come across through the, I mean, Jabari Smith's pretty good, but Jaden Ivey's just feels so natural and very, he's just quick to get to it, which is exciting. Loving Jaden Ivey's vibes. The Kings, maybe there's hope for the Kings after all, Katie, just maybe. Maybe? No, probably not. Let's go to the fifth pick. Projected right now to be Shaedon Sharpe, the Canadian mystery man who has not played college basketball. Not a ton in terms of even like in-game photos of him because he is a bit of a mystery man, Katie. Shaedon Sharpe's smile, what are your thoughts? There's a couple of him on like a bench in a Kentucky jersey and stuff. Didn't play, of course, was just in the Kentucky pipeline. And after that, it's a pretty slim pick and search here. But I think there's some promising signs from the what we've got here in the Google image search.
It really seems to like smile from the eyes too. Like in most of the ones where he's smiling, his eyes kind of scrunch up. And I like that, you know, you're smiling with your whole face. I feel like that's a good sign.
It's distinctive. Not a lot of guys who have that sort of full facial movement when they smile. There's something there. Yeah. I think mystery man, you know, don't really care if he's not had a lot of, you know, tape or, you know, gameplay for people to pick up on. Just look at the smile. Look at the way he's putting all of his body into that smile. And that suggests he's going to give you all of his efforts on the floor. Let's move on to the sixth pick. Currently projected to be Keegan Murray out of Iowa. Let me just plug this Google search in real quick. Keegan Murray, come on. I can't type. Keegan Murray smile. A lot of in-game stuff, a lot of bench picks as well. Looks like he used to play with his brother as well at Iowa, which is fun. Twin brother, in fact.
Is he a twin? Some picks smiling boy. With him.
He is a twin. Yeah, what are you don't like twins.
I don't like twins. Like identical twins, they really freak me out.
Yeah. The thing is, I don't think his brother Chris Murray
is. And they both are on the
team,
but his brother's not coming into the league. Is he?
I don't think so. I think he's quite beyond his brother in terms of overall skills. Chris Murray in college, this past season, averaged 9.7 points. Not bad. But Keegan Murray averaged like 28 a game.
If you were drafting Keegan Murray, wouldn't you be worried? Maybe you're not even drafting him. Maybe you're drafting his brother.
It's all a long con to get Chris into the NBA. Keegan's never actually wanted to do it, but he really loves his brother and is trying to get him there. And so, yeah, I think that might be happening here, Katie. Chris Murray about to ruin the Indiana Pacers at six. The smile, however, we haven't really talked about the smile. The twin thing obviously is troubling. What are the thoughts on the smile?
I was just going to say it's kind of freaky that Iowa's colors also match the Pacers' colors. Anyway, that's weird. I like that little hawk head. I've never seen that version of the jersey before. That's cool.
It's a pretty good logo.
His smile, I don't know, it's pretty sparse like when it comes up in the image search, right? A little bit. Maybe there's like a bit of a, I don't know. I'm trying to find one. Oh, there's one a couple lines down where he's like in game with a teammate and he's smiling and he looks like he's, you know, not really aware of the camera. I feel like that's pretty good, like genuine smile. This guy's a little bit of mystery, though, to me. And I'm a bit trepidatious also because he's a twin. Of course, that's clouding everything for me.
Yeah, I would argue he kind of has like a pensive smile where he's not really sure if he's allowed to be smiling because of how serious Iowa is about their hoops. You know, is he allowed to have any fun or display any emotion? But there are like flourishes of in-game action where it does seem to kind of shine through, and it's a bit of an excited smile where it kind of peeks through. But yeah, he's got to sort of, I think, be a little bit more eager to do it at all times and sort of come out of his shell a little bit more. I don't know if getting drafted the Pacers will exactly do that.
Maybe he's scared that his evil twin will come after him if he shows too much emotion.
Very, very possible. Let's move now to Dyson Daniels, the projected seventh pick to the Portland Trailblazers. Dyson Daniels, a G League Ignite player. We'll do Dyson Daniels in one or two more here to close this thing out, Katie. Thoughts? Not a lot of smiles on this one either. A lot of very serious in-game looks from Dyson Daniels. A lot of sort of upset, distressed looks in-game. Not an in-game smiler in any ways. Could be a smile contest smiler, perhaps, but definitely not in-game. And there's honestly not a whole lot outside of a couple of headshots here where he is, in fact, smiling. It seems a little bit dubious to me, Katie.
There's a real natural one. For me, it's on the fourth line down. It's like an NBA draft. It's the australian.com.au. Seems a bit superfluous to have a .com and a .au extension. Leave it to the Australians for that. Anyway, he looks pretty happy there. Yeah, I don't know. Australians, you know, Australians unto themselves are their own strange group. I'd say there's always like a caveat to the smile. You know, there's like a simmering, like, I'm Australian. I could be a bad, like, and when I say bad, I mean like Dellavedova style, dirty player. I don't know. I can't think of a genuine, only Patty Mills is the only Australian I could think of with like a genuine smile.
Yeah, I think Patty is kind of a man alone when it comes to Aussie smiles. I am a little dubious here of Dyson Daniels. I feel like he needs to come out of his shell a little bit. What are they doing with the G League, man? Are they just like grinding dudes into dust and making them stone cold killers? What's going on here? Jalen Green had a good smile, though, so maybe not.
I will say I like that, we're not talking about this, I know, but I like that's an option, and I hope more programs like that rocks. Pop up. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. It's fantastic. All right, let's go now to another Canadian addition to Shaden Sharp, Benedict Mathurin, who is coming out of Arizona, projected right now to go number 8 to the New Orleans Pelicans, has been kind of rising up draft boards, it seems. And this guy, talk about in-game smilers, this man loves to bust out them pearly whites while in the midst of action. You know, there's some other smiles sprinkled in here as well from different appearances on camera. What are your thoughts here on Benedict Mathurin? And I think this is pretty promising, Katie.
Yeah, what a strong name and what a strong smile. Confident. Seems like I really aware of himself, his teammates. I like this one. Good smile.
Yeah. Montreal's finest, Benedict Mathurin. Rooting for this guy. He seems pretty cool. Also a sick-ass dunker, which makes me think he should be the first overall pick, frankly. Let's move and do one more, Katie. It is AJ Griffin. AJ Griffin out of Duke as well, I believe. Duke or Kentucky. One of those hell. It's Duke. Of course, the son of Adrian Griffin, head assistant coach with the Raptors. AJ Griffin's smile. There's a couple promotional pieces here. There's a couple of interviews where he's smiling. A little bit serious, maybe? Katie, what are your thoughts here on AJ Griffin?
Seems good, but I will say, if this makes sense, it's like a bit coached, which also I think that makes sense within the context of like he's grown up. Though also a lot of these guys, to be fair, have kind of come up in college and are like very, you know, more media trained than generations prior. He's is definitely like aware. I would like to see like a more genuine smile to be sure, because these are kind of like, yeah, these are, I mean, the player one's also not bad, you know?
Yeah, it's like a good, it's a very well coached like headshot smile for sure. It's pretty natural looking. It doesn't look forced necessarily in the way that maybe some of these other guys have in their promotional shots. The one that really gives me some hope is sort of the flash. You know, it's like when you see one guy have like a 35-point game in the tournament and you're like, oh, damn, that guy's going to be great. It's the third image search when you go AJ Griffin smile. He's clearly, I think, getting introduced in the starting lineup for Duke, and he looks like he's having the best goddamn time in the world. AJ Griffin,
yeah, that's a good one.
That to me, like, that builds your draft stock right there. That's a reason to dream on a guy. Okay, let's do one last one just because it's easy for we want to go 10 instead of 9 because that's a weird cutoff. We'll go Jeremy Sokan out of Baylor, the man who dyes his hair a different color no matter the day. Jeremy Sokan smile. Let's see here. Not bad looking, Katie. Pretty, like, a nice closed tooth smile. He's got a bit of an open tooth smile as well. What are your thoughts here on Jeremy Sokan and his smiling credentials?
He really dyes his hair every game?
Yeah, he's wild like that.
I think it looks good. He's got like some like his teeth are like a bit what's a good way to put this? He's got like an individual's teeth.
Yeah. He's got my teeth.
He has like personality teeth. Yeah. And that's the thing is that he seems fine with it. And he seems like he's kind of embraced it. I like the vibe of this one. I'd say on there's like an SI picture where he's got his hood up and like a toque on.
Yep.
And he's answering a question, I imagine, from an interview. It's a still from that. I like that one. That one seems pretty genuine.
Yeah, he seems like he's a pretty natural smiler. He's not going to probably put on like a huge toothy grin necessarily.
Oh, but there's a cute one with the glasses too. He's got glasses on.
Yeah.
That one seems more of like a comfortable, like at home smile.
He seems very at ease in glasses, which is maybe not a common trait among NBA players because I don't know how many of them actually wear glasses from day to day. Yeah, Jeremy Sokan looking pretty good. I think he could certainly rocket up my draft board based on the quality and ease of his various smiles. Versatility as well. Closed tooth, open smile, in-game, out-of-game, all that. It's good stuff. He's a multi-position smiler or something. All right, Katie, that's going to do it for this segment we're trying out this week. The final of the segments we tried out that week, which has been my favorite thing to do each week on the podcast, is come up with something silly to do. And we appreciate all of you for putting up with us and enjoying and sort of latching on to certain segments and stuff like that. But with that, we are going to bring to an end the show with the posters of the week, the best in NBA social media from the last 7 days. And Katie, we'll stick with the draft theme. I'm going to go with John Wall, who posted a bunch of stories of him holding his phone up, watching the draft interviews from the night he was drafted first overall by the Wizards, and his mom like talking about how amazing that John Wall is on the broadcast, and it just said, love you. That's very sweet, Katie. John Wall came up earlier. Things have gone kind of rough for his career, hoping for a turnaround there, and a nice little touching moment from John Wall sharing the night that he got drafted and looking back fondly on it. Katie, where are you going with your poster of the week?
Oh, Serge Ibaka's on vacation again, so probably Serge.
Oh, buddy.
And one, he's got a great outfit on. It's like shorts that are cheetah leopard print, also like black patches. There's also like black and white stripe patches. He's just wearing a very basic tank top to offset the loudness of the shorts. He's drinking some type of cold bev, unknown what it is. And then in another one, he is eating a croissant and drinking what looks like a cappuccino. The caption is, "Bonjour world." He has sunglasses on and a page boy hat, and he's inside somewhere. I like that.
Oh, Serge Ibaka, the vacationer of all of our dreams. I really hope that in his post-playing days, he does some kind of travel show, Katie. I feel like that would be an instant hit on, you know, the Food Network or CNN or wherever they do travel shows. All right, Katie, that's going to do it for this week of the show. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Again, next week will be a mailbag spectacular to close things out on the mainline feed. We will also be doing, as our final Patreon episode, a review of the film Hustle. So if you want to watch that before next week, please go ahead and do so. And that will be your final Patreon content. But yes, the format for next week will be different. We're just going to take your mailbag questions and answer as many as we can to close off the basketball era. Katie, anything you would like to promote, share, pass along, whatever, to close out the show?
No, I'll just like to promote. This doesn't really make sense. I was just going to say promote everyone for support from supporting the show, but that doesn't.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, let's promote those people. Let's promote the Patreon supporters, the lovely folks out there who have been our supporters in many cases since day one, which is baffling to me, but we very much love you and appreciate you for it. And yeah, a huge thank you as always to the people who allow us to make this show, including our friends over at Space Monkey and Clay and Dylan, and of course, producer Greg, who is working the ones and twos once again for us this week. I have loved doing the show. We don't have to do total goodbyes just yet because we have another episode next week, even if this was kind of the final regular format show. Mm-hmm. But either way, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back again to close things out with that mailbag. So please get your questions in, send them to a DM, send them to the Discord, whatever it might be. We will get them into the spreadsheet and we will answer them on the next podcast. And we will not stop until every last question has been answered. So thank you in advance for that. You can find me, of course, at Woodley Sean on Twitter. You can watch Locked On Raptors every day on YouTube or subscribe to the podcast. I also wrote a post about OG Anunoby that went up this afternoon if you want to go read about why OG Anunoby is, in fact, very, very good at basketball. With that, we will round it all out and talk to you again next week with the final episode of Basketball. Bye-bye.